Well, good morning. This is, I have to say, not my comfort zone, but Mike was fairly insistent, so you can blame him. When I first heard about the work of NLT, if I'm looking down quite a bit, forgive me, but I do need these. I'm not kind of one of those. My brain just empties out when I'm looking at all the faces. Okay, so be kind to me. When I first heard of the work of NLT, I was a young Christian, very young Christian, and I was greatly moved by an account that I heard of the plight of people affected by leprosy. It happened to be in Nepal, but it's true in lots of places. In that, to have leprosy, you do, as I was saying earlier, become almost dead to everybody else. They really don't want you around, and we've had so many people that have come to us that have been thrown out of families, thrown out of their communities. Girls feel they have no longer a chance of marriage. Their first thought is suicide, and it is a problem amongst young women particularly that are affected by leprosy. And so in a country where the Hindu religion classifies people very much, there's a caste system, although it's technically illegal, it's still very much a part of life there. Low caste, obviously, you're well down the pile. If you get leprosy, you are shoved down to the bottom, but not just to the bottom, you're kind of buried well underneath it. And it really moved my heart, and my interest was quickened in the work of NLT at that time, and we just hinted that, you know, if we could help in the UK somehow. So it was an incredible surprise to us when we were asked to go out and help with the work there. It was never something we'd thought of. And it carried me out there with the family, and we came face to face then actually with the very tragic lives that I've just been describing to you, and then you're faced with the kind of the need, and it really is quite a challenging thing to be faced with the levels of need that you see in a country like Nepal. I don't know if people from here have travelled out there. I know one or two of you have, but you see poverty in a very, very real and stark way. Anyway, we were privileged to share many of the challenges we faced with Mike and Sue, and it's lovely to be able to be here. Thank you very much for allowing me to be here. And although I don't feel kind of very practiced at this, I kind of think that if God's moving in your heart and your life, if he's a part of what you are, if he's quickened you, if he proved his faithfulness to you, if he's shown his amazing love to you, then you've got something to share about, haven't you? And the Lord asks us to be witnesses to him in all sorts of situations. We're all missionaries, effectively. It's not just people that go out to other countries, and whether it's to your neighbour or to your friend or even sometimes to your children who are struggling with things and just need to know that God loves them, then it's all an opportunity. Now, I want to start off with a reading from John 5. It's John 5, 1 to 9. And it goes like this. You don't have to turn to it. I've got it here. Sometime later, Jesus went up to Jerusalem for one of the Jewish festivals. Now, there is in Jerusalem near the Sheep Gate a pool, which in Aramaic is called Bethesda, and which is surrounded by five covered colonnades. Here a great number of disabled people used to lie, the blind, the lame, the paralyzed. One who was there had been an invalid for 38 years. When Jesus saw him lying there and learned that he had been in this condition for a long time, he asked him, "Do you want to get well?" "Sir," the invalid replied, "I have no one to help me into the pool when the water is stirred. While I'm trying to get in, someone else goes down ahead of me." And Jesus said to him, "Get up, pick up your mat and walk." And at once the man was cured, and he picked up his mat and he walked. Okay, so here's a man who was disabled, and he had become, I would suggest, in that time, numbed by inertia, sin, unable anymore to respond to the disturbance of God in the water, even if he wanted to. And Jesus came along and gave him an opportunity to move and to be free. But the man didn't say yes when Jesus asked him. He gave him all the reasons why he couldn't do it. And almost as if he was more comfortable with the way things were. He's been living like that. He's used to it. Life's a comfortable rut. How many of us get into comfortable ruts? We like our lives to be predictable, don't we? Planned. And we don't get shoved out of our rut very easily. But Jesus didn't give him that opportunity, and he pushed him out and told him to get on with his life and to stop sinning, or something worse might happen. We might ask, what could be worse than 38 years of static invalidity? But it's interesting that many of the people that NLT's helped have had to put up with the most appalling physical problems and yet would put more value on acceptance by their community and by their friends and by their family than having a hand back or something. Do you understand what I mean? There's things that go on inside us that are very important. And it's the things that are inside that it's sometimes hardest to change. Now, I've been thinking about the parallels between leprosy and the way it works in the human body and the way that sin affects our lives. Leprosy, interestingly, can remain hidden for quite a long time. You could have it for several years and nobody else and yourself, including yourself, might necessarily know about it. And it quietly just gets on with whatever it's doing in there. And it's only later on that it comes out and starts to show and starts to cause an effect in people. And one of the effects it causes is a numbness and a patch or two. And then it numbs the areas of the body, hands and feet particularly, and faces and eyes, that are the most sensitive parts. We need those parts to protect us. There's a wonderful book by Paul Brand called Pain, The Gift Nobody Wants. And we forget, we often complain about pain, we're quick to take pills to take it away, but actually pain is often the way the body is saying to you, there's something wrong here, fella, you need to fix it. And it protects us when we pick up hot things, it protects us if we've got a stone in our shoe. If you've got leprosy and you've got anaesthetic feet, you can't feel if you've got a stone in your shoe. You walk for miles and you create a wound which becomes an ulcer, leads to secondary infection, causes mechanical breakdown, and before you know where it is, where you are, your foot's starting to self-destruct effectively. Now, in the same way that sin, when it comes into, when it's in our hearts, the things that, you know, that are there, and that perhaps we haven't let the Lord deal with, they work away quietly, and they will gradually numb your conscience, gradually numb your heart, your spirit and your soul, the very bits of you that actually are the bits that protect you from going too far down a road that's not a good road. And that keep you sensitive to God. We're all complex people. We're spoiled, all right? When we start off in life, we're spoiled by sin. It's not our fault, but we are. And we're also affected by the way other people relate to us and the difficult things in their lives that cause problems. And the result often is a very complex mixture, isn't it? We're a bit of a mess sometimes. We're tangled up. And untangling it isn't an easy thing. And in Jeremiah, you've got that picture of the potter and the clay. And he looks at his pot. Didn't come out very well, that one. I'm going to break it and start again. And sometimes I think that's the way God has to deal with us. He starts again in our lives. And Jesus talked about being born again, didn't he? He talked about the fact that you have to have a new beginning. There has to be a new principle working in your life, and he's the one that can put it there. Now, I'm sure most of us have taken a lot of comfort from the good and the positive things that God's done in our lives. Often we come to the Lord, and he quickly deals with certain things that are a real issue in our life. Might be gross sin, it might be particular problems that we have that just keep on tripping us up, and he sometimes deals with those quite quickly. But I've come to the conclusion that a lot of that stuff is just clearing the decks in our lives so that he can get down to the real issue, which is dealing with ourselves and making us into people who know with an utter conviction, we're completely convinced that he is the absolute answer to every need that anybody could ever have. It's easy sometimes when you're talking about Jesus and he needs to be substantial in our own lives, doesn't he? So that when we share with somebody else, they recognise there's something there. It's not just this person that kind of goes to a nice club and where everybody's very nice and we enjoy our times together, which of course we do. But the world out there is a tough place and there's people in very tough situations, and unless you've got something that is substantial in your life that you take to those people, it's very hard to reach them. Would people agree with that? And Jesus wants to be substantial in our lives. Now, when I went to Nepal, I kind of thought it would make things better on the inside of me. You know, you go, I'm going to go and be a missionary. But it really isn't like that. You might change the room, but the furniture is all still kind of the same. You know, geography doesn't actually do it. We carry the baggage that we have with us wherever we go until it's not baggage anymore. But what it did do was push me right out of my comfort zone. You know, I was in a situation where I was almost helpless. I mean, okay, I'm good at mending things, but man alive, this food is incredible. It's incredibly hot. It's dusty. There's filth everywhere. It's just a very, your whole, all your senses when you go to another country like Nepal are assaulted by this uh, utterly alien situation, which, you know, for an ordinary English boy who never had any thoughts of going abroad in the first place anyway, thank you very much, is a real kind of challenge. And one of the great things was, of course, we spent our first 2 weeks living with Mike and Sue. They looked after us because they'd been out there before us, and so we had a sort of a gentle entry into life. But I always remember this, the first thing we noticed when we sort of finally arrived there and went to the toilet was, if it's yellow, let it mellow. If it's brown, flush it. Sorry, my fellow. Water is very, very precious out in Nepal. And that's one of the first things you realise. Water is extremely precious in Nepal. So there was me, out of my comfort zone and struggling with things a bit. We got 3 children with us at that point. And somehow God sort of starts to move in your... You start to realize you have to call out to him. You have to say, Lord, I really need some help here. This is just too difficult. And the reality is that the human spirit is extremely tough. We don't easily yield to things. We don't easily yield to God. When he puts his finger on things in our lives, especially when it's things that other people don't know about, we can choose, can't we? No, I'm not going to do it. I want that. I'm going to keep that. It's going to be part of my life. It's going to stay part of my life because I like it. And so we resist that potter breaking the clay experience quite strongly as a rule. If I may, I'll just paraphrase A.W. Tozer. He's a writer that I particularly have appreciated. And he wrote this book called The Pursuit of God, which was one of the books that I think challenged me more than any other when I was a young Christian. he said, self is the veil that hides the face of God from us. It can only be removed by a spiritual experience, never by instruction. We may as well try to instruct leprosy out of our system. That's another reason why I kind of thought I'd use this. This veil is woven out of the fine threads of self-righteousness, self-pity, self-confidence, self-sufficiency, self-admiration, self-love, and a host of others. Recognize any of those? And the danger in them is they're not something we do. Often we think about sins, about some things we do that are wrong. But actually, they're all things that we are. And this inner veil needs to be torn like the veil in the temple that separated man from God. And Tozer says that we can't do the tearing ourselves, God must do it. Our part is to yield and to trust. This veil is made of spiritual, living spiritual tissue. And to touch it is to touch us where we feel pain. To tear it away is to injure us. And to say otherwise is to make the cross no cross. And death no death at all. Yet that is what the cross did to Jesus, and that is what the cross would do to every person to set them free. The cross is rough and deadly, but effective. And when the work is done, the resurrection glory and power comes, and the pain is forgotten for joy that the veil is taken away. And we have entered into actual spiritual experience, into the presence of the living God. I kind of don't know where you guys are on stuff like this. Different churches have different views about how the cross works in our life and what it means to us. Jesus died on the cross so that we don't have to physically, we don't have to face hell, we don't have to be physically crucified, but there's nevertheless you sung it, I was quite comforted actually, because in the choruses that we sung, the Give Me the Passion one, there's a very clear kind of sense of yielding to Jesus, that part of our, we have to yield to him, otherwise he's not free to work in our lives, he just isn't, he only comes by permission. And ignoring our self-issues, those things I was talking about earlier, is a bit like ignoring leprosy. Now, a lot of our patients, they see the signs starting to come. They get a sense of something's not quite right. I've got a bit of a patch. And so they kind of hide it because they know what the cost of revealing it is going to be. They know that if they go to somebody, even if it's their health post, and the health posts are not good, and the people that are in them are not sort of necessarily very kind people, it will suddenly be common knowledge. And then suddenly this person that's been trying to hide this for a while has to face the fact that they're no longer part of their community or family. And we hope then they find their way to us. But if we hide it, our sin, it kind of just allows this numbness to creep over us. And we find ourselves sort of further and further away until God comes along and has to push us out of our rut like the man by the pool. Now, yes, that's what I was going to say. Yes, it must be unsettling. We must not allow ourselves to be numb. And God often, a bit like the water that's being stirred, he comes and he stirs our meetings. I could sense God earlier on. He moves in the meetings, and so often when God starts to move strongly, sometimes you can see some of us thinking, you know, oh, please just let things calm down again. Whereas actually what he wants us to do is to jump in, like the man by the pool should have done. He should have got somebody. He should have found a way. In 38 years, there must have been some way where he could have found somebody, begged everybody else to give him a chance. Please let me. But he just got used to being there. And so when God moves in our lives, gives us opportunity to jump, we shouldn't hesitate. Okay, when we come together and bring that sense of God's presence into our meetings, along with the joy in our hearts from knowing what he's done for us. So what I'm saying is, if when God's worked in your heart and he's really brought that freedom and brought a real life there, when we come together, it makes somehow the meetings burn brighter, and it makes the church become more attractive to people outside. There's something going on there. I want to be there. I want to be a part of that. And that's another parallel with the work in Nepal. Lalgarh Hospital, which is where I was working and which is what Mike was building, has become a place, where it's famous for the work that it does for people affected by leprosy. We've got people coming up from all over the place in India. We've got people coming from all over the place in Nepal. We have people travelling for days and days and days just to get to us because they've heard that it's a place they can come and get help at. It's got the answers to their problems. They've heard that Lalgarh won't turn them away, as so many other places have done. That Lalgarh won't try and extract an impossible price for them. So often you have to pay exorbitant amounts of money. People sell their land, they sell their houses, they sell everything they have to try and get a cure for something that they've got, and then it doesn't work. But they've heard that all they've got to do is just bring themselves. Just got to bring themselves. And the wonderful thing about the Lord Jesus is he doesn't ask us to do anything except bring ourselves. And that's the reason it cost him so much on the cross, because he didn't want anything to be a barrier to us. There's nothing we can bring to him apart from ourselves that will make it any more effective for him. He just wants us. And okay, these folk that come to Lalgarh, they're driven by desperate physical need often. They've gone through, they've lost everything. I won't tell you, because right now, maybe this evening I'll show you one or two pictures, but the state that people arrive in is indescribable. You look at them and you think, how have you managed to live like that? For sometimes it might be 2 or 3 years. They've not had way, they've been wandering around the roads hoping for something, so they've heard about Lalgarh, and so they come. But I'm just thinking of a few examples, but I just won't share them because it will spoil your Sunday lunch. But maggots play a prominent role in their sort of physical condition, so I'll leave your imaginations to work on that. But it's very, very challenging. And you look at them and you think, how have you managed to put up with that for such a long time? And there isn't any need for us to put up with stuff. The Lord is perfectly able to deal with anything in life if we let him. And so often it's that stuff inside us that stops him. We just sort of, we're comfortable with the way we are. We're in our rut. And love in a church is a huge drawing thing, thing that draws people. I can remember when Julie and I first started going to our church in Epsom, was one of the things that drew us more than anything else was the love of the saints there. The folk loved each other, and that love immediately was extended to us. And my wife won't mind saying, she was in a bit of a state when we sort of first got together. And yeah, she does mind, sorry. Sorry, love. I know it's Mother's Day. but the thing was that love melted her. It was the answer to her needs. And the church, you know, we became part of that church. We were the first folk, I think, when we bought a church building, not long after that, we were the first folk to get married in that church building. It was just, we were so much drawn to that body. And it's remained a church where people are loved. And that's one of the things that Jesus, in John 13, he said, new commandment I give to you, that you love one another. As I've loved you, that you have loved one another. And by this shall all men know that you're my disciples. The reason he said that is because he knows, A, it's so hard for us to do. We're all different, aren't we? We all have spiky characters. There's, you know, some of us get along well with each other, and others, you know, don't get too close to that person. And, you know, we know the people who are a little bit awkward and the people who are kind of easy to talk to. And there's a guy called Oswald Chambers. I'm sure some of you have heard of Oswald Chambers. He wrote things like My Utmost for His Highest, and the Daily Light and stuff like that. And he used to say, good test of you. good test of your sort of Christian heart and preparedness to go out to people is if you look at all your friends and then you take out all the ones that you would naturally get on with quite easily and well, you know, people who would be your friends anyway, who have you got left? That's an interesting test to see how your heart reaches out to people. You know, do you look for the person that struggles a bit and try and make space in your heart for that person and put it on your heart to give them time and make them feel a bit special and stuff like that? Now, don't start looking at each other and thinking, I wonder if they're friends with me because I'm a bit awkward. Or, am I one of the awkward ones or am I one of the easy ones? Don't start thinking about that. Just don't. But the point is, do you understand what I'm saying? God's love should be working in our hearts in a way that just reaches out to people and makes space for them. And the church thing, this light thing, this being out, Lalgarh is a beacon. People come to it. It's famous. When there were all the political troubles and people couldn't travel around, lots of organisations shut up shop and went back to Kathmandu. We were able to carry on our work because as long as our staff had their badge, when they got faced with the roadblocks or with people sort of with guns and stuff, and they'd show them the car and they said, okay, that's all right, you can do your work. So, but we have to be careful, obviously. But by and large, the folk there have been able to carry on that work because Lalgarh's got a reputation for being a place where people get helped. It's not for money, it's just about helping people. And even though lots of our staff are not Christian, it still kind of infects them, this sense of wanting to help and serve. And a church should be a place where people are drawn to. I'm sure you are, and I'm not saying you're not, obviously. But the church is to be a light that draws people because they can see that that is a place where maybe their needs can be met. All right, spiritual noise, there's a lot of spiritual hardness around us, but there's a lot of need out there, and we read about it all the time. Okay, this is the last parallel, okay? How am I doing? I'm almost there. Have I got a few more minutes? Okay. I don't know who's in charge. I should be talking to Jeff for now. Sorry. And it's our response as a body in seeking to meet the needs of people that the Lord brings to us. It's how we respond to people that come that kind of makes or breaks us. When they come to us, what do we do? How do we interact with them? What do we give them? Do we have Jesus to give to them? And at Lalgarh, the people who come, they're completely used to rejection. They're completely used to going somewhere where there should be help, like a government hospital or a health post. I can remember one patient saying that when he went to a health post, they wouldn't even let him in. The doctor threw his medicine out the window at him. You know, he had to give him the medicine because that was part of a little leprosy program, but he threw it out the window at him. Didn't want anything to do with him. And they know how to read those signs. And so people, you know, people who come and need that help, they know what the signs are of not being accepted. How do we cope with that? What's our response to that? Is there space in our hearts? Is there space in our church for a bit of the chaotic, a bit of the... At Lalgarh, you've got sometimes 400 or 500 patients coming in a day, and the outpatients department is a completely chaotic situation. You kind of think, what is happening here? And yet there is, of course, underneath it all, there's a kind of order. It's a bit like driving in Kathmandu. Kathmandu used to be a place, it says that you can't get order out of chaos. That's the sort of second law of thermodynamics and all that, isn't it? But in Kathmandu, the driving was completely chaotic, but somehow it worked, didn't it? You just had to understand the chaos. And the OPD is a bit like that. And God works in chaos. He does. Sometimes he wants to shove us out of our comfort zone so that we're not constantly using our inner resources to fight him. So he puts us in difficult situations sometimes so that he can work in us and kind of get past our defences. He sort of, I got you there. In a church situation, we've got to be prepared to make a bit of space for unusual situations. If we want God to bring people to us, are we prepared to make the space for them to be here, to come? In our own church, interestingly, we've been sort of doing outreach and stuff. And we've had some interesting people coming along as a result of it. And we're having to kind of adjust a bit, you know. But they're people that need God. They want God. And they come from a particular kind of community, which isn't always welcome in places. And they said, well, why haven't you come to us earlier? Why haven't you told us about it? They were wanting Jesus, and people were kind of avoiding them. You know what I mean? Because they were not, you know, I'm not going to say any more than that. But, I mean, the thing is, you need to have space in your hearts for people. We need to be able to have capacity to love the people that God brings us. Okay, almost there. The thing is that a lot of us like things, as I said earlier, to be predictable and controllable. We like to be in charge of our lives and keep the status quo. But God says our lives belong to Him. If you talk to Christians in Egypt or Sudan or Syria and those places, they have very little control over their lives, and they're expecting every day disaster to happen. We're kind of used to a situation where life is fairly steady, it goes on day after day, pretty much the same. I know we have our challenges, I'm not saying we don't, but God wants us to be a people that can deal with the unexpected. And if there's one thing I've learned from my time with NLT, it's God, that He's got endless capacity in His heart. God has endless capacity in His heart for people, to love people and to nurture them. And we need to be able to communicate that in very practical ways. In Matthew 25, there's the parable about the goats and the sheep. And the sheep are saying, well, you know, we didn't. What did we do? And He said, well, if you did it to the least of these, you did it to me. The king in the parable says, if you did it to the least of these, you did it to me. And it's just a question of being prepared. We don't have to be anything special. God's given us sort of one of the biggest weapons of all, and that is the capacity to love people. And that's all that we work NLT in. That's how it started. It was a lady called Eileen Lodge whose heart went out to these folk affected by leprosy, and she loved them. And it's grown now into a situation where that love is going out to thousands and thousands and thousands of people. And some of the neediest people in the world have found a refuge there. And that's what our lives and what the church is supposed to be, able to be. God gives us the capacity to love because He wants us to love. And thinking about these things has challenged me, obviously, but I just hope maybe that amongst these few reflections there's been a few things that touched your hearts, perhaps. And God wants us to be a joy-filled people. We should be a people of joy because of what He's done for us. He's done so much, so undeserved, and yet He's done it. And He can deal with all our shortcomings. We've just got to embrace Him and yield to Him. And that's really all I wanted to say. Sorry, I've gone on a bit.